Well, I'm so happy to be here, and it's certainly it's an honor to talk with anybody on the face of the planet about God, and it's a special honor to be talking about this book because Semir Salmanovich, I'm because I don't have the book in front of me, I'm sure I'm going to mispronounce his name. He is definitely on a faith journey. And you can tell from reading his book that he has outgrown the theology that he started with, which for some people would seem like a calamity, and for other people is something to celebrate, you know, because we can't expect to understand everything at the first glance. We have a first glance and we make the best estimate we can, and then we look closer and we understand more deeply. So I celebrate his journey, and I'm going to come over here and I'm going to borrow this book, if I may, because if I look at it, I'm much less likely to mispronounce it. Otherwise, left to my own devices, it's all bets are off. Reading this book reminded me of ongoing problems in religious dialogue. And for me, one of the largest of those problems is that we are asking the word God to do so much work for us. It's not clear that one word can do that much work. We're asking the word God to include everything that we know about life and the universe, that the deeper dimensions of life and the universe. We're asking the word God to cover everything that we don't know about the deeper dimensions of life and the universe. And we're asking the word God to cover everything that we hope to find out, that we hope for in the unfolding of life in the universe. For my part, I think that's just too much to ask one word to cover, especially a noun. Because when we use this word God, we're using the same brain circuits that we use to think car, truck, plate, house, spoon, God. No, I'm not sure about that. I honor that the people who are using this word are trying to give the most accurate description that they can. So I'm not doubting the truthful intentions of the people who use the word God. I'm doubting the linguistic possibility of getting that much meaning into one single word. And when you put that much meaning into one single word, you get intractable and chaotic arguments that bounce back and forth from one aspect to another. And I think that's exactly what you see in this book. You see, this book is a thousand brilliant insights looking for an argument to belong to. My heart goes with this guy, you know. He's struggling, he's wrestling, and he's also like zigzagging all over the map. It's like there's a treasure on every page of this book. So I've been inspired by so many of the things that he has said. And it kind of has brought up this question for me: how do we clarify our talk about, let's just say, the larger dimensions of life, or what Paul Tillich, our ultimate concerns? So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to explore with you today, we're going to back up a step or two, and look at four of human beings' deepest needs. And deepest needs, deepest drives, and how they unfold in the spiritual life. And I think after we've made this walkabout, we'll be in a better position to think about the meaning of God, and we may just use... I find, for example, that I use the... think about the divine presence. One problem with the word God is that using a noun form, nouns generally don't pervade, like the car, the house, the brick, the spoon. They're all in one place. But it's clear, even Christianity got fed up with that by the early centuries. And along you come along with this idea of the Holy Spirit, which is not located in one place. The wonderful thing about the Holy Spirit is it's everywhere and it pervades. So the divine presence is more a vision of divinity that where you could imagine yourself being in it and being surrounded by it, or it being in you, which is an uphill pull once you start using the noun form. The way I'm going to propose exploring these five themes is to talk a little about each one and then have conversations in our groups, because I'm aware that this is also the last meeting of the discussions, the eight discussions about this book. So this is going to be the last time you're going to be in each other's presence thinking about this particular author or this particular theme, or wrestling with the questions that this particular book arose. So we're going to spend probably half of our time in the next hour and a half having some discussions. So I want to start with belonging. There are a good many developmental psychologists and students of infant development, scholars of infant development, who would agree today that belonging is the most profound human need. It emerges immediately in human development, and it travels with us through a lifetime. One of the interesting things about that is that people who talk about religion continuously think of religion as about believing, about the creed, and which creed do you accept as your own. But when you read the struggles of Samir with his family, you realize that religion is about belonging. Which group do you belong to? His parents, takes them 20 years to cross the threshold of the church where he's a minister, because who belongs where is the deepest question, perhaps one of the deepest questions that human beings can ask one another. And I just think about how, you know, when a baby arrives, the thing that the parents take that baby in their arms and they say, "You belong with us, little dumpling. You belong with us." So where you belong, then that gets extended. People eventually belong to a church, belong to a community. It's interesting to me that infants already belong to religious communities before they have any ideas about theology. So I kind of want to object to the assumption that the spiritual life is all about believing. I think believing actually emerges later, and I'm seeing these layers as the belonging layer tracks with us all through life. Then the behaving layer emerges, and the loving and nurturing layer emerges, and each one sits on top of, the way I've drawn this chart, each one is based on and draws on the layers that are underneath it. So, human beings need one another to survive. So, where we belong and with whom we belong and who will accept us, who will let us into their circle of caring, this is one of the deepest human questions, and it's also a deep source of human anguish and anxiety. Where do I belong? Who will take care of me? who is for me and who is against me. So you can see in, for example, the troubles in Northern Ireland, or the dissolution of Yugoslavia into religious war, you see belonging gone bad. It's like these are powerful drives, and they can go haywire in powerful ways, where we start drawing the lines and saying, you're not one of us. So you're not one of us, so we're going to kill you. So that question of who do you belong to, who do you belong with, that's a key question in human life, and the one that we start with before we even realize it. So now, I'd like us to take about 10 minutes, and I'd like you to pass the talking stick around your table and share with your conversation partners, what was your best and deepest experience of belonging? What's your best memory of belonging? Just explore the theme. Or if you've got something else you'd like to say about belonging that doesn't quite fit that, please say that, and I'll catch up with the bell, and I'll ring the bell in 10 minutes. The bell is around here someplace. Thank you so much, and I'll circulate around and join you. There's a way of turning this mute.
You mute this with one tap up here.
Well, thank you very much for exploring these topics. One of the things that I'm fascinated by, I'm fascinated by chambered nautilus shells and how things in evolution, stages kind of build on one another. So these experiences of belonging travel with us for a lifetime, and hopefully they get better and better. And more and more expansive. I know two authors that I admire, Brother David Steindl-Rast and Brian Swim, wrote a book, or maybe it was with Thomas Berry, two out of those three wrote a book called Belonging to the Universe. So that's the kind of the far end, you might say, of spiritual belonging. But the important thing for me is that belonging goes along here, it travels with us for a lifetime. Then, In the beginning of our life, we're not really concerned about behaving. You know, when we're a newborn infant, all we have to do is breathe. We flap our arms around and pee, and whatever has to happen has to happen. And as far as behaving is concerned, whatever we do is fine. We should just keep on doing it. And gradually, because we make our life with other people, we begin to, we start focusing on behaving, and both that we gradually gain control of our arms and legs and start crawling around and walking, so we learn how to do more, and then the people around us want things from us, like go here and don't touch that and don't hit your brother. And so because I have this kind of axe to grind, that discussions about religion focus too much on believing and not enough on all the rest, I want to draw to your attention that we receive all sorts of instructions about behaving long before we entertain theological ideas. We may hear about the golden rule, we share your rubber ducky with your little sister, there's we're continually receiving encouragements and discouragements about shaping our behavior. And that, too, travels with us for a lifetime. And because it travels with us for a lifetime, you see in exalted forms, like probably one of my the Bible verse that's most in one of the Bible verses that's most inspiring to me is Matthew 25, where Jesus is kind of explaining to people of the conversation that will happen at the end of time at the gates of heaven. Welcome to the kingdom that God has prepared for you, because I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you gave me clothes to wear. You know, I was sick and you nursed me. I was in prison and you visited me. This is like really exalted behavior. So our behavior moves across a spectrum from just physiological behavior of coming to inhabit our bodies more fully to this really amazing Maximilian Kolbe walking out of the crowd and offering his life to replace the life of someone who was about to be executed. So behaving is... Now, Karen Armstrong, the English scholar of religion, she would describe that exalted end of the spectrum as orthopraxis. Is what you do in the world. And she has become convinced that the heart of spiritual life is about orthopraxis rather than orthodoxy. I'm not quite ready to go along with that. I think that what we understand and believe interacts with how we behave, so that we can't just chuck issues of belief and say, we'll only concentrate on doing acts of kindness and then all our problems will go away. Well, the problem is that we have a brain and we try to make sense out of the universe, and we often make different kinds of senses of the universe, so we have arguments and disagreements. And sometimes the arguments and disagreements that we have are kind of self-serving, like when someone says, God gave me this land. It happens to be the land that you've been on for a while, but never mind. God gave it to me, so we're moving in. That's believing and behaving really woven together. So I think they do need to be in dialogue, but I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Talking about behaving going across the spectrum of a lifetime, you can see like the chambered nautilus painting, the wonderful painting I found on the internet. I'm sorry I can't report to you the name of the artist who did that watercolor. But I want you to think now in your small groups, reflect on what was the biggest step that you remember as your abilities have to do things expanded in the world, whether it was to ride a bicycle or make a clay pot. For me, it was building radios. I learned how to build radios when I was about 9 years old, and I really felt like I was the master of the universe because I had learned how to do this thing. And this little conglomeration of soldered together parts would pull in signals from the far away. So that really gave me a sense that my capacity to do something. So I want you to reflect on the most empowering skills you've learned in the course of your life. All right, I think I'm back on behaving. So I appreciate so much your exploring these topics. Please take a minute to finish your paragraph, and we will continue. When psychologists talk about behaving, they use the word agency. You know, people often fall into the kind of binary opposition of either being totally powerless or being totally in control. Agency is about being able to make things happen. So it's kind of, you could say, either if you're dealing with rock, there's nothing you can do to change the rock. Or if you're dealing with water, you can change the water, but nothing lasts. In the middle, there's soft clay. Soft clay is soft enough that you can make an impact on it, but it's firm enough that it will keep the impact. That middle zone is actually the middle zone of human agency. And of course, the belonging and behaving now find their fulfillment in this loving and nurturing. One of the really interesting things that happened in the history of Christianity is that Christianity, which began as a Jewish sect that was focused, and Jesus' teachings were focused on feelings and actions, like love one another as I have loved you, whatsoever you do to the least of these, you do to me. If you look at the Sermon on the Mount, there is nothing in the Sermon on the Mount about believing one particular conception or another. If you look at the Apostles' Creed, there's nothing in the Apostles' Creed about taking care of one another. So, in those three centuries, Christianity, which began as a Jewish sect, Christianity took over the Greco-Roman world. But the Greco-Roman forms of thought took over Christianity. So it was, it was a kind of a complex transaction there, you know. We read the history and we say, Augustine embraced Christianity. Really? You know? Because it seems like what happened was more like Christianity was taken over by Augustine and became and kind of absorbed his imperial, the things that he needed to do to keep an empire running. For example, the Apostles' Creed, which was one of Augustine's, the brainchild of Augustine. Constantine. Constantine felt, well, you can't have people all through the empire arguing about this theology stuff, so we all have to have one, we got to have one version, so we're going to get all the theologians together, we're going to knock some heads together, we're going to come out with one thing, everybody says the same thing, and that will help my empire sail along on an even keel. Whether that's actually what people needed. There's a wonderful book about this called One Jesus, Many Christs by Gregory Riley, who teaches New Testament at Claremont. Wonderful book about the variety of early Christianity. And it wasn't as though, you know, they were kind of seeing, if you think of a statue, they were seeing the statue from different angles, and it was kind of revealing. Each one revealed a wonderful part of the truth. But I'm getting a little off my track here. Loving and nurturing. So, belonging is like this powerful human drive. Agency, the need to be able to make positive things happen in life. Another powerful human drive, which is both belonging and behaving, are shaped by religion. And then loving and nurturing. You know, we start out in life being loved by our parents. And you could say the developmental journey of life is you start out in life importing love from your parents, And hopefully in the course of time, you become a parent and you now bestow love upon your children. So you go from being a net importer to being a net exporter. But you're not really worried about whether your children love you back. You know that in time they will understand. And even if they go through a temporary phase where they say, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you," you understand, they'll get over it. So there is a kind of a brief transition period between being loved by your parents and then loving as a parent, and that's called romantic love. That gets all the attention, but you could say that's only kind of a middle slice in the cosmic sandwich. My wonderful friend David Rico has talked about the five A's. I was thinking about this on the train yesterday, and I could remember four of them. What's love about? It's about accepting. It's about attending, paying attention. It's about affection, and it's about allowing. So you can see all of those. You can see all of those unfolding in the parent's relationship to the baby. And then you can see those themes getting transformed into everyday life. I'm amazed and fascinated that Jesus, in giving this amazing kind of discourse about the conversation that will take place at the end of time, and saying, "I was hungry and you fed me. I was naked and you gave me clothes to wear. I was sick and you nursed me. I was in prison and you visited me." Three of those four things mothers do for infants. So you can see that you might say that love emerges as a love emerges in adult life as a transformation of these most early kind of primordial biological relationship between the mother and the infant is kind of love being made manifest to us. It's like the seed of love opening, which will sprout into adult friendship and heroic love in all the different forms. So, in terms of spirituality, love tends to get short shrift in a vision of religion or God, which is defined by a creed. Because how you could say your spiritual life is how deeply you love, and how do you find the object of your love? So we're encouraged by Jesus to love God and to love our brothers and sisters, although you can see Jesus really wants us to start with our brothers and sisters. You know, there's that verse, the young man is going to the altar to give a gift, and then Jesus says, I remember the King James version of this, forgive me, "if thy brother hath aught against thee," which is to say, if you're at odds with another person in your life, you need to go and be reconciled with that other person. That's really saying that at the very least that loving God is not superior to loving your brothers and sisters. Really that loving God and loving your brothers and sisters are side by side. Well, we're going to break now for 15 minutes and then when we come back, we'll have some group discussions. I'll do a few more remarks on this, and then we'll have group discussions about loving and nurturing as part of the spiritual life. Thank you very much for being here today.